This show's coming out January the 14th. That's a Tuesday. That means that tonight at midnight Central Time, the six-figure debt to six-figure net worth investing course is closed, which means you will have to wait another 180 days to learn all of our best investing tips so that you can become not only worth six figures one day, but eventually become a millionaire despite your student loan debt. In this episode, we're going to talk about some of the key concepts presented in the course, just review some of the investing tips that we've got, and just kind of give you a little bit of a taste on my investing philosophy and maybe how it could save you a ton of money. If you are interested in that investing course, check out studentloanplannercourse.com. We'll also have the course link in the Student Loan Planner homepage in the menu section. If you can't find that, just go to the homepage of Student Loan Planner and you'll see it in a highlighted thing. It'll say course. So just click that if you can't find it the other way. Let's talk about some investing ideas, okay? So a lot of people sent me this response to this question that I posed to our email list. I basically said, what are your investing fears? What's the biggest thing holding you back from putting money in the market? And a lot of people were like, oh my gosh, there's a bubble and it is going to pop so hard and people are going to lose their shirt and we're going to have another great recession that's going to be so bad. And you know what? We could have one. We could absolutely have one. If you look at the returns of the stock market the past 10 years, it looks like, you know, I don't know, it looks like looking like a freaking Bitcoin chart or something like that. I mean, it just has done nothing but go up. And it's almost kind of scary. Like we had like a 30% return in the stock market this year. How the heck did we do that? Didn't we already have an amazing stock market run the past several years? So what about the roaring teens, you could call it that, has reduced risk in the stock market when we're trading at record highs? So here's the thing. Nobody could have told you that the market was going to go up 30% last year. Okay, I couldn't have told you. A lot of people that say that they could tell you were totally off. And that just shows you how unpredictable everything is. So the market could crash this year, or it could go up another 30%, or it could go up 5%. We don't know that. The key is to set yourself up so that you're going to win no matter what. So let's just give an example of how you could win no matter what. Obviously, if you put your money in investments this year and those investments go up, then you made money. No brainer. You made off well, right? But let's say that the stock market falls a bunch and you put your money into some of the investments that we suggest in the course and you lose a lot of money. Here's the thing. When you put your money in any kind of investment, you will lose money, guaranteed. The only way that you lose money long-term is if you panic and make a whole bunch of mistakes that we show you how to avoid. But the most common one is you panic and you pull your money out, right? So let me give you an example. So stocks go up and down, up and down, up and down, right? Over the long-term, they actually have very predictable high returns over like a 30-year period. But what did John Maynard Keynes say, the famous economist? In the long run, we're all dead, right? And so what do people love? They love doing freaking betting, sports betting, going to Vegas, sports books, all that junk, right? That's what people love. They love the hot tip. They love their money doubling overnight. They don't want to watch paint dry. Another famous economist, Paul Samuelson, said that that's what successful investing looks like, is watching paint dry. But we try to make it a little bit more interesting than that. So here's how to save some money on taxes when you invest. And this is one of the lessons in the section 4 of the course. We talk about tax loss harvesting. So this is a technique that we use to save about $1,500 a year on our taxes. And it's pretty easy to do with a one-shot situation. So here's how this would work. So let's say that you're killing it. You put $2,000 a month in a specific mutual fund that, you know, is like an index fund or something, right? And so let's say you built it up to 25 grand. And then, oh gosh, I'm going to get some hate mail, but maybe we'll have, I don't want to joke about war with Iran. So how about we'll say, I don't know, Kim Jong-un launches a nuke at Guam or something and it freaks the stock market out and then everybody starts freaking out and selling stuff and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so the stock market crashes. Your investment goes from 25,000 to 15,000. So you got a $10,000 loss now if you sell. Here is what I'm suggesting. If you don't do anything, you can buy and hold. That's a great way to do things. But there is this rule called tax loss harvesting, which basically means you can sell that mutual fund and lock in a $10,000 loss. And then what you do is you don't let it sit in cash. You take that $15,000 and you invest it, exchange it into another mutual fund or investment that is not identical, but almost identical. So an example of this is a mutual fund that tracks the entire stock market. in the US versus one that tracks the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is just the 500 largest stocks, right? So if you compare some of these mutual funds, you can see that the correlation of their returns is almost 100%. So you're really not going to lose a lot of performance by being in one versus another. And what you did is you got to lock in that 10K loss. But if that, you know, let's say that that mutual fund jumps, so let's say it goes from 15K to 20K, what you can do is you can wait 30 days and swap back into the thing that you had. Now, because you're investing in something that's almost the same, you're not going to really lose money because you're going to make that back. But what you will do is your net loss is about $5,000. And so what you can do is every year you can write off $3,000 off of your ordinary income from investment losses. And if you have unused losses, then you can carry those forward into future years. Remember back in December 2018, seems like forever ago, right? But everybody was freaking out about a recession. Oh man, we're going to have one. Stock market fell 10%. What we did for my wife and I's portfolio is we generated some losses. We sold some of the things that we had some losses in on paper, transferred it to another investment that was very similar, and then we can swap back. We got enough losses to use that $3,000 amount to write that off against our income taxes. And then we have extra losses that we're not using because we don't really generate a whole bunch of gains from investments because we're trying to keep our taxes low, right? That's a smart way to invest. Those unused losses, we get to move those forward for future years. That means for the next like 5 to 10 years, we get a $3,000 loss that we can claim on our taxes despite really not having actually lost money because we didn't sell and just keep it in cash. We made the money back. So a typical couple in like California making about $70,000, this would save you about $1,200 per year without investing your investment values. So that course, our investment course, is $400. So this one simple idea, which is very simple to execute if you have a bear market, which we probably will in the next couple of years of some kind, I would think. So that one simple idea could save you $1,200 a year for like several years. That's one idea. So let's do a different idea. Let's talk about trading time for money. So this is one of my favorite things to talk to people when we're comparing things that people want. Let me give you two examples of a car. You can drive a brand new Ferrari, or you can drive a 2010 Toyota Camry with 100,000 miles on it. Which would you rather drive? You'd probably be pretty silly if you're not driving the Ferrari, right? Because we didn't talk about trade-offs for anything. And so if you're mega rich, then yeah, like money is no object. Buy whatever you want to drive. Maybe you want the Toyota because it takes less time for maintenance. Maybe you want the Ferrari because it goes faster. Whatever. It doesn't matter to you. But if you're not mega wealthy, if you're not a billionaire or 100 millionaire, something like that, then here's an example of how you would compare time for money and see what you're trading when you're trading money for stuff. So let's look at a $50,000 SUV because let's say you just had a couple kids, need a new vehicle for the fam, versus a $20,000 SUV that's 3 years old. If you look at the difference between those two vehicles, they're going to be pretty similar in terms of how they're going to drive, you know, how much maintenance they'll need. You know, there's not a huge difference. I'm talking about a massive difference where you're going to die in an accident if you have the $20,000 SUV compared to what you would have had with the $50,000 SUV. That's not going to be what's going to matter. I would say that there's probably a pretty big difference between, you know, a $20,000 SUV and a $5,000 SUV. But really, you know, you're talking about this difference between buying brand new and buying like 2-3 years old for vehicles. So that's a $30,000 difference. And so when you're comparing these two purchases, how do you translate that into something besides dollars? So that $30,000 difference is after tax because cars are not deductible. I don't understand how car dealers haven't gotten car deductibility through the income tax code, right? That'd be the biggest boon of all time. But you have to adjust that $30,000 for what you have to go earn in salary to pay that difference. If you assume that you're dealing with like a 20% federal, 10% state, 10% student loan tax rate, then you would be looking at $50,000 that you need to go earn to take home $30,000. Okay. So let's say you earn $100,000 a year. What's the difference between those SUVs in terms of your life energy? The answer to that question is 6 months because you have to go out and earn $50,000 of take home pay, you know, pre-tax salary to cover that difference in those SUVs. Is the difference between that SUV, that 3-year newer model, is that worth trading 6 months of your life for that thing? That's the way you want to think as a successful investor and someone pursuing financial independence. Because let's use a different example. I live in St. Louis, and there's this sandwich place. I don't know how to pronounce it. Like it's like Gioia's or something like that. But they have this hot salami sandwich and it's amazing. It's like rated Food Network, I think, said it's like one of the best 10 sandwiches in America and it's $10. It's probably not that healthy for you, but it's amazing. Okay, now I'm trading my labor value for that sandwich. And I saw a lot of guys coming in that were, you know, like construction workers, laborers coming in, getting their sandwich and heading back out for work. Let's use one of them as an example. Say they earn, you know, $20-$30 an hour. Sandwich costs $10. Is that worth it? Well, they're trading about 30 minutes of being at their job for one of those really delightful sandwiches that gives you probably several hours worth of joy and happiness. So that's a good example, right? So Warren Buffett talks about that, like for Coca-Cola, like are people always going to be willing to trade, you know, a couple minutes of their labor for a Coke? Probably. And that's why Coke is probably inflation proof, right? You know, barring something happening with like us discovering sugar is carcinogenic or something like that. And people stop drinking Coke or something. I guess that's their big business risk, but I digress. Basically what you want to think is, should you trade your time for something you're going to purchase? And it's even more intense when you think about not working one day, because let's say you have a habit of buying a new car every 2 years. A lot of people do this. They trade in their car, they try to move up, whatever. That kind of habit all in, you know, with you include all the dealer fees, all the sales taxes, all of the main and ownership expenses and personal property taxes like we have here in Missouri, if you're paying those. If you're going to do that, then you, let's say that costs you about, let's say $20,000 per year, that habit. To do that, you need 25 times the amount in investments to cover each dollar of spending. So if you have this new car habit, you need an extra $500,000 in your investments to cover that habit and to sustain that habit. Now think about the time it would take you to reach $500,000 of investments. For a lot of you that have 50 to 100K incomes, that could take you a decade. And so is it worth it showing up to the office for 10 years driving in versus doing something else that you enjoy just for sustaining a new car habit? That's the framework that you want to be thinking about when you're investing. Because a lot of times the answer is yes. You have hobbies, you have interests, you have vacations that you want to take while your kids are a certain age. You should absolutely take those. But you just want to be aware of these trade-offs so that when you make them, they're conscious decisions versus how most people make them as unconscious decisions. And that's how we have so many 70-year-olds working around the country. How do you get 500K? You could work harder. You know, I talked to a lot of young dentists, for example. They're like, oh, I work 6 days a week, but I'd love to work 5 or 4 days a week. Makes sense. You work really hard early on so you can work less later. So that's one way that you can do it. Or instead of working 6 days a week, maybe you could work 4 or 5 days a week right off the bat and you could focus on learning about saving and investing, because this is what happens. My experience is this. Professionals are really good at putting money away for retirement, like really good, like maxing 401k, $19,500 for 2020. For whatever reason, that seems to be easy for like a lot of people making six figures. Not for five figures, it's tough. You have to really be conscious of doing it in that case. But if you're making like, you know, over 100K, then it's not totally inconceivable that you would put a ton of money away like that. But here's where things break down. We did a survey of few months ago, I think, where we asked like if people understood about investing outside of retirement. Only 12% of people understood it. That's really bad. So in other words, only about 1 out of maybe 8 to 1 out of 10 people on our email list, which I would argue are more informed than your average person, they know about brokerage accounts and investing in mutual funds outside of retirement and things like that. That is horrific. Absolutely horrific. Because what that means is if all you're doing is putting money into retirement, you can't touch that money until you're 60. All right? Maybe you buy a house, but you can't live, you can't eat your house. So you're going to let your retirement money sit in there until 60. And let's say you have $2-4 million in retirement. Well, that's great. But if that's all you have, then good luck stopping working before 60. And so that's why you have to have investment accounts for two reasons. One is you want to have an account you can touch whenever you want, you know, not when the government tells you you can. And then also, you want something that has no limit. So you don't want to have a $19,500 limit on what you can put away for your future. You want to put away as much as you can afford. Now, you might want to prioritize retirement savings, but besides that, you want an account where you can put as much as you possibly can away in that to prepare for whatever future goals that you'll have. So investment accounts are extraordinarily needed, but so few people understand what to do with them. That's why I created the Six Figure Net Worth course in the first place, is just because I was just flabbergasted. I was trying to figure out what is the next big need that people have outside of their student loans. And we discovered that that was the problem. You know, people needed to know how to invest because this big debt makes the margin of error. It makes it a lot more difficult to invest well when you have so much debt. There's another problem. Investment accounts are trading at all-time highs. You've got the stock market in the United States setting record after record, and it's destroyed all foreign stock markets for the past 10 years. And so what do? Do you put your money in something that could fall 50%? Let's say that we have some big regulations come down on big tech, or we just find out that, you know, some of these companies out there that we've been valuing at like 100 times earnings, like Amazon, are maybe going to grow more slowly than we thought. And so suddenly a lot of those companies drop off a lot in their valuations. Like, there's all kinds of things that can happen. That's why we've set our course up so you can learn how to win no matter what happens. That's the key, is to go into battle with your finances knowing that you've already won. That's the best way to fight a battle, is to know that you're already going to win ahead of time. And the way you do that is, on the downside, if investments are falling, you're buying a lot more at a low price and you're saving money on future taxes with some of these tax reduction strategies that we talk about. And if the market goes up, then obviously you're making a lot of money, and who can complain about that? Now, there's another concept I want to talk about called dollar cost averaging. Maybe you've heard this before, but basically it involves a different kind of average or mean than you're used to. So batten down the hatches, time for a math question. Woohoo! So let's think about this math question. So let's say that you are putting in $1,000 per month for 3 months into investments. And we're going to say it's stock. So we've got, you know, a stock that, let's say it's $50 a share, and you're doing $1,000 per month for these 3 months. And each of the beginning of the time you make this investment, the first price of the stock is $50. The next month it's $20 a share, and then the next month it's $10 a share. That's your situation. So you have you're buying at $50 a share, $20 a share, and then $10 a share, $1,000 per month each time. So if you do that, you would buy 20 shares the first month, 50 shares the second month, and 100 shares the third month. I want you to ask yourself, what is the average price that you paid for those stocks? Remember, the prices were 50 a share, 20 a share, and 10 a share. What was the average price paid? Okay, I'm going to guess that most of you probably did this math. You said, okay, 50 plus 20 plus 10 divided by 3, which is $26. $26 a share is the average price, right? And that is dead wrong. So this is actually how you do this math. You would take all the shares and all of the amount you invested, and take that amount that you invested divided by all the shares you bought. Take $3,000, which is the total amount over the 3 months, divided by 20 plus 50 plus 100, so 170 shares. And if you divide that into the amount that you invested, it works out to about a price of $17.60. So that's almost $10 a share less average price that you paid. So what does that mean for you as an investor? What it means is, if you buy a certain amount of investments, or as much as you can, while the market is crashing, market timing is actually a dumb strategy, right? Because you don't know when it's going to go down or when it's going to go up, especially if you know you're not a professional investor. And just while we're at this, this is a funny story. I remember I took this Uber ride in Canada, and this Uber driver was checking stock prices on an app on his phone while he was driving. And it was a little bit unsafe maybe, but I was like really curious. So I was like, what are you doing? Like, looking at prices during the day? And he goes, oh yeah, I have all these complicated market timing strategies built on. And I said, oh, interesting. What has been your results? And he's like, oh, well, I've made about 100,000 this year. I was like, oh, wow. You know, that's really pretty good. And like, what's your secret? He goes, oh, well, I wake up and I listen to, well, like, whatever the key patterns are for the day. And then I buy more when the thing falls. And then I, you know, try to sell more when it rises. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, well, what's been your kind of long-term experience with that? And he said, well, I actually started with a little bit more. And I said, oh, well, like, how much more? And he's like, well, you know, to be honest, I'm glad I'm making some gains this year, because overall I lost about $300,000, but I'm making it back. And I said, oh, what did you start with? And he goes, 500,000. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this poor guy. He literally lost, he started with 500,000, and then he went down, he lost 300,000, and now he's trying to make some of it back. That's what market timing is you're in and out, in and out. You don't know when the right time to buy is. You don't know when the right time to sell is. You panic, then you just give up, and you're stuck in either a lousy savings account interest rates, or you're stuck in structured investment products with an insurance company. So that's why you want to buy all the way down. That's a smart way to invest, because you buy a higher percent of the total shares when the price is low. So the market crashes, that's great. You just bought a ton of ownership stakes in American companies at a very low average price point. And if it also allows you to save on taxes, that's even better. And if it goes up, like I said, you made money. How much can you lose in the stock market? And that's another topic we cover in the course. We have an entire section devoted to that. We look at the past about 100 and I think it's 150 years of data to kind of run a lot of projections to show you, okay, if you put your money in investments, this is what you should expect to lose short term. As long as you can take that risk, as long as the money's not needed for 20 years, then you can also get this amount of gain long term. That's really what you're thinking about when you're investing, right? You have to figure out what goal you're investing for. Most of you that are listening have graduate degrees. Most of you have really stable jobs or jobs that are going to pay a somewhat predictable level of income no matter what's going on in the economy. And that means you've got a stable income. That means learning about investing is even better. Because if you are some sort of, I don't know, stockbroker or somebody that has a job that's real sensitive to the economic cycle, let's say like an RV salesman or something, then when you have really good years, you're going to be investing in stocks when stocks are doing great. You're going to be not able to invest in stocks and in bonds when they're doing badly, right? You're not going to have the money. Contrast that to like a veterinarian, physician, dentist, whatever. Some cases, lawyers, right? You're going to have money regardless in some cases. So that means that you have the potential to be even wealthier, because the average price that you're investing in, because of this concept of basically dollar cost averaging, allows you to buy so much more stock at such a cheaper price than everybody else. That's a super awesome secret that nobody understands. So that's why you really, really want to learn how to invest, because it's going to cause you to be a millionaire one day long term, seriously. The only time that you get really wiped out is when you lose a world war. So a lot of times people talk about like, well, what if the stock market falls 90%? Well, the only time it did that was in the Great Depression. All right. And it didn't really fall 90% in real dollar terms, because we also had something called deflation, which a lot of people don't know what that is. But that's basically like the prices of everything in America fell. Like, I want to say it was 20% or something crazy like that. So that means that the real drop in the stock market was not as bad as it looked. But the way you can really lose a lot of money is, again, if you're in pre-World War I Germany, pre-World War II Japan, and you put all your money in those stock markets, yeah, you got destroyed. But besides that, stock markets always come back. It just is a question of how many years it takes for them to come back after a crash. And when you're buying in all the way down, not stressed out about losing money because you're fine, that's going to allow you to acquire a bunch of stock at a really low average price because of this counterintuitive concept of dollar cost averaging. Okay. It even has a specific math term. I want to say it's harmonic mean, but you can look that up if you want to. That's a little technical. Let's talk about one more concept about this. Do you need a financial advisor? Should you get a financial plan from a CFP or somebody like that? And really, let me tell you this. One of the obstacles or one of the objections that someone raised to the course is, hey, you know what? I don't have a lot of time. I don't know if I have enough time to manage my investments. So that is totally not true. If you have enough time to hire a financial advisor and monitor them, you have enough time to manage your own investments, because it doesn't have to be hard. This is the strategy that we teach is very, very sophisticated, but it's also easy to implement. And that's really the key to invest successfully. It's minimize fees and expenses and taxes, and then try to understand what you are willing to win and lose and what you're willing to take in terms of a drop, and then set up a portfolio that reflects that with things that you understand. And so I don't think you need a financial advisor unless you're very wealthy or you don't enjoy managing your own money, even something that you dread. So if you don't enjoy managing your own finances, if you're not wealthy, don't have a complicated situation, maybe you get one in those cases. If you don't enjoy managing money, or if you have a lot of money, you're rich and you just have a complicated life, you only need a couple hours a year to successfully implement an investing strategy. Savings rate really does conquer all. And one of the big complaints that I have about financial advisors is they don't cajole you at all into saving more. Really, if you look at all the different statistics, there's really one way that a financial advisor can pay for themselves over everything else, and that is just convincing you to save more money. convincing you, instead of buying that $50,000 SUV, to buy the $20,000 one and put the difference in mutual funds or your retirement savings. That is how or better yet, even showing you how to earn more money, right? By being a practice owner or negotiating a raise or taking advantage of geographic arbitrage and moving to a different part of the country. That is how advisors can really make a lot of money. You know, you can talk about being a behavioral coach, making sure that you're not selling during stock market crashes. That can certainly pay for the cost of a financial advisor. Don't get me wrong. But a lot of the advisors out there are not worth anywhere close to what you all are paying them. So let me give you an example. The other day, I saw on TV, I was watching a football game, and there was this ad for a very high fee investing firm. This guy was talking about this grandfather who wants to buy, I think it was a kid, a car for high school or college or something like that. And the guy's sitting across the table and he goes, "Oh, it'll be tight, but we can make this work." That is terrible advice. Terrible advice. And you know why they're saying that is because they're targeting working class people, middle class people that don't have a ton of money. So they charge really high fees and they don't take a ton of time to try to talk you out of stupid ideas that you have. Then they can just charge you high fees and make you oblivious to it. And hot dog, they're able to pay multi-millions of dollars to give it to the NCAA and the NFL, right? I mean, to be honest, like, that's kind of how I feel about some of these places. It's just ridiculous. An advisor, if an advisor is worth their salt, they're going to challenge you and they're going to support your goals. That's their number one job, is to support your goals. So if you truly do want to give a gift to somebody or do something like that, there's a great way to plan for that. But it shouldn't have been tight. Based off of the finances not being really easy for that purchase, that's just telling me that the advisor did a really bad job showing you how to save and invest more money and get a higher return. A good, fair financial advisor charges about $5,000 to $10,000 per year every year. That's a fair flat fee for most advisors out there to have one-on-one formal financial advice from somebody who's licensed, who has a CFP, who is a fiduciary, which means they have a legal obligation to act in your best interest. And to be honest, it's super expensive because being a financial advisor and making investment recommendations from a regulation standpoint is a big pain in the butt, huge pain in the butt. Honestly, I probably would not do student loan consulting if it was regulated the level of financial advisors, because it's just annoying. I mean, you have to justify everything. And, you know, we're not hawking individual stocks anymore where people are saying, "Oh, buy Apple, buy Sony, or I don't know, buy Coca-Cola," right? It's different. Most people are just putting people in index funds anyway. And so what kind of advanced regulatory problems can be created with that? I mean, you just need to explain what money people can lose. But these regulations are basically causing costs for financial advice to be ridiculously high. Not to say that people don't earn their money. I think advisors do in a lot of cases. There's a lot of great advisors I know out there, and I try to send people to them sometimes when it's very clear the person needs a financial advisor. Just know that $5,000 to $10,000 is an advisor that probably has a servant's heart in terms of a per year fee. And advisors that want to make money are going to charge you a percentage of your assets. And why is that? It's because that's how you make profit in this industry. Because if you, let's say I told you this course is six-figure debt to six-figure net worth, right? Transforming your situation from being six figures in the hole to, or I guess five figures in the hole, to being having at least $100,000 of positive assets over what you owe. And let's say you've got more than that, seven figures. So let's say you've got $1 million in investments that's taken you 10 years to build up. So if you charge 1% of that, that's 1% of $1 million. So that's $10,000 per year. And let's say, you know, stock market returns grow that million, further contributions grow that. And so now you've grown that into 2 million. Well, if that $5,000 to $10,000 a year fee just went up with inflation, you know, you'd have this kind of linearly increasing fee. But with the percentage of your money fee, it grows exponentially. And so instead of a $10,000 fee, now that you have $2 million, it's a $20,000 fee. And that's per year. I'm not going to say that charging $400 to $600 to get a student loan plan for a one-time fee is like cheap. It's not cheap. But golly, does it look cheap compared to a lot of what financial advisors charge and how little a lot of them really help people. So I mean, I will defend what we charge all day because it's tremendous value. I think we have like 300, close to 300 five-star ratings and only like a couple, you know, one or two, like one and two-star ratings. you know, it's just kind of ridiculous, like, that, you know, people play golf all day and charge people 1% of their money for doing almost nothing. But that's the reality of the world we live in some cases. And then there's, like I said, the flip side to that is there's actually people that work really, really hard, but you still have to pay four figures to access their services. So there's the advisors that work hard, have the servant's heart. They're the ones that just charge the industry standard. And then there's ones that are there for the money. And in my view, that's any advisor that's charging kind of big commissions. So this would qualify any annuities or whole life insurance, variable annuities, that is, whole life insurance, structured investment products, load mutual funds, any kind of fancy anything is going to have these big commissions and kickbacks, right? So one of our clients was sold a whole life insurance policy. They were investing, I think, about $2,000 or $3,000 a month. And why did that advisor, quote unquote advisor, they were not an advisor, they were a salesperson, but why did that financial person sell them that policy? It's because you get 100% of the premiums of an insurance policy you sell the person in the first year. So if you can sell insurance as an investment, then you can convince somebody to put 10 times as much money into your insurance policy and you get 10 times as much commission. So that person, financial person, got about a $30,000 commission for a couple hours of a meeting one day, simply because they were able to convince this person that putting your money with an insurance company is an investment, which it's not. It's just a way for an advisor to call themselves an advisor when they're really just like a sales guy or woman trying to make a big amount of money for not doing a lot of work. So that's the financial advice industry. And that's what most of you are going to at least be exposed to, if not fall prey to, when you don't know about investments. That's just the reality. And a lot of advisors too, they'll make investing very complicated and look very complicated to justify having a fee. If you just put your money into a couple mutual funds that are really wonderful long-term ways to invest and with, you know, just minimal tax adjustments to reduce your taxes and rebalancing and some things that we talk about in the course that are something that takes, you know, a little bit of time, just a couple minutes, few minutes to understand. If you pay an advisor a big fee, what they're going to do is they're going to probably split it up, your money, into a bunch of different mutual funds. They're going to split it up into, you know, the American Growth Fund of Patriots and the, you know, large strategic optimized value, the, I don't know, International Explorer Level 3. I mean, really, like, mutual fund names are just ridiculous sometimes. But they do that because it makes it sound complicated and hard. And if they put your money in a bunch of Vanguard funds, they're afraid you're not going to pay them that 1% fee they're probably not earning. That's what you don't need. If you do need real financial help, like I said, pay somebody a four-figure amount of money to get fiduciary flat fee help with managing your investments and with financial planning. Talk to somebody, CFP, fiduciary, whatever. You can even go to, like, Vanguard and Betterment also have financial planning for 0.25% of your money. That's pretty doggone cheap. Or for a one-time fee that's way less and has everything you need to know to manage your money with a couple hours a year time commitment, which really is really not that much, that you can take the six-figure debt to six-figure net worth investing course. You know me from listening to this podcast that if I was here for the money, I would be doing something else. Probably be running a hedge fund, probably would have tried to manage portfolios, stayed in the trading world, something like that. You know, I didn't get involved in the student loan world to make a buck. That said, obviously, we want to sell as many of these courses as possible because I know for sure that this is going to change your life. And I'm not over-promising here because we have a 7-day no questions asked refund policy with this course. StudentLoanPlannerCourse.com is the place you need to visit to see it, to be able to decide if it's for you. And if you go there and sign up, like I said, it's $399. And if you spend that and you don't feel like you got $399 of value within 7 days, you get your money back if you tell me, if you didn't think it was worth it. And the thing is hundreds and hundreds of people have taken this and have gotten amazing, amazing transformations. Just last couple things here, I'm going to just read just a couple of these because I think it puts it in better words than I can about why investing now is so critical. So I'm just going to use first names here. Samir says, I was completely lost about retirement and investing before your course. This has taught me so much and has instilled the confidence that I can do this independently and succeed. Christine basically asked some questions about some advanced questions, really. She asked about 457 plans, 403b plans. She works at a specific kind of employer that offers really weird retirement plans, asked a lot of questions about what kind of investments you can use within those plans. This course is the only place that I can give specific suggestions for investments, because for regulatory reasons, I cannot charge you a one-on-one fee for consulting for investment stuff, or else I've crossed the line and I'd have to register as a financial advisor, which I don't want to do for regulation headache purposes. But within this course, this is like a newsletter back in the day where people would subscribe to get a newsletter with investment suggestions, except I'm just charging the one-time fee for that. Another thing is if you do decide to sign up for this course, I'll actually be able to give you specific feedback that's personalized if you leave a comment within the course. Maria says, great course. This is well worth the investment and much more. My husband and I feel a lot better about having a solid financial plan and a path of how to get there. She says, I had no idea what a brokerage account was and how to use one. That's a sentiment that I hear all the time. Kyle says, great course. I agree with Brandon's comment of praise. I've been raving to my wife the last few nights about how much better I feel about my family's future. And then last comment here, Brandon says, excellent course, Travis, much better than I expected. It motivated me to make and stick to a financial plan for years to come. I feel like a more responsible husband and father after having learned what you taught. Definitely going to celebrate with my wife tonight. I'm not trying to oversell this. This is probably the most impactful thing we do, even more than our student loan consulting service. And the reason for that is if we rock your student loans, show you how to get PSLF when you weren't getting it, tell you the right tax filing strategy when you were filing the wrong way, refinance your loans when you should have done it long ago, but you wouldn't have done it without our help, those things can all save you four, five, or even six figures. But nothing is going to save you seven figures of creating seven figures of wealth one day besides learning how to invest. There's nothing else that can do that but knowing how to invest. And that's what this course does. Most financial advisors, most financial planners are just not familiar with student loans and the challenges that you face. And from my background as a chartered financial analyst, bond trader, managing portfolios with a team, trading tens of billions of dollars, I learned a lot of things about investments. And I have been learning about investments from really the person who was the master in my own life, my grandfather, since I was about 16 years old. So I've been learning about it for approximately half of my life. So this is a course that I poured my heart and soul into. I wouldn't tell you, I think it's the best thing we have unless I meant it. And with the money back guarantee, unless you are just an investment savant and expert, you know absolutely everything there is to know about investing, that's the only kind of situation where I wouldn't think this course would be useful. So check out studentloanplannercourse.com. And if you're listening to this on January 14th, then you can sign up if you sign up by midnight tonight. And if you listen to it after, don't worry, you'll get a chance. You just might have to wait 6 months or so until July, because we're on this 6 month cycle, because I really want to be available for you if you sign up for your questions. And so makes it a really easy way to be available, having these limited times when you're allowed to sign up. So studentloanplannercourse.com, and I'll see you next week.